morning. This is Jim Colburn of Commodity Research Group. I'm with Ed Meir, also of Commodity Research Group, and we're here to talk about markets. Along with Andy LeBeau, Ed and I founded Commodity Research Group, which consults on various aspects of commodity markets. Check out our website, commodityresearchgroup.com. We'd also like to thank our good friend Doug Stetzer of EKT Interactive Oil and Gas Training for hosting this podcast. You can check out his daily newsletter, podcasts, and learning modules at ektinteractive.com. This podcast should be construed as market commentary, merely observing economic, political, and market conditions, and is not intended to refer to any particular trading system. We are not responsible for trading decisions taken by anyone not intended to listen. Information is not guaranteed accurate. This is not an offer to buy or sell any derivative. Today is August 15th. Ed, I'd like to start off first by talking about copper markets. Copper had a nice run to the upside. It's been in a long-term bear market, and I want to hear what your thoughts are for copper going forward.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Jim. It's nice to be with you. You're right about copper. We've had really 5 years of bear markets in copper. That abruptly came to an end last November when we ran up roughly 20% in 1 week, which was in the wake of the U.S. election, and a host of other factors contributed as well. But that was just a stunning rally. Since November of last year, we've kind of just not done anything, bouncing around roughly between $5,400, this is on the LME, to about $6,000. And then this past week, we've taken off again, and we've hit new highs for this year. In fact, we hit 18-month highs just last week. So the question is, where do we go from here? Copper, I think, has been turbocharged a bit by what's going on in China. As you know, their economy is still growing very strongly this year and last year. The Chinese really pumped a lot of credit into this the system. The real estate sector in particular is driving all the metals groups higher. Couple that with a host of new regulations on the environmental front. The government is really cracking down on pollution, on excess industrial capacity. So as a result, we have copper and all the other metals, including metals in the ferrous space, steel and iron ore, all moving higher. Over to you, Jim.
Well, I was just thinking, is copper a good indicator of the Chinese economy, or can we make that inference that copper has kind of shown a little strength, therefore it means China is doing well? I mean, yes. I think the estimate's around 6.7% or so. Growth.
Yes, basically, as we were talking earlier, you know, copper is referred to as Dr. Copper. That I think was more popular term maybe 15, 20 years ago when the U.S. economy was more dominant. Right now, China consumes about 50% of the world's copper. The U.S. consumes about 8%. So, you know, Dr. Copper in terms of a U.S. focus isn't as relevant as much as it is in the Chinese sense.
I'm actually looking at a copper chart right now based on New York prices, and it looks like we have we're bumping into some resistance right around this $3 level. I'm not sure what that yes. is equivalency is. We had a high made in February of 2011. Based on what you're seeing fundamentally, can you see a market breaking through to the upside of that, or do you see it in this backing down into this recent range?
Yeah, I think over the next month or two will be kind of range bound for a while. There are two labor negotiations that are coming up end of the year, kind of September, October timeframe. It involves about 1 million tons of copper that is sort of up for grabs in terms of if there's going to be a strike or not. The two negotiations are Grasberg, that's a huge copper mine in Indonesia, and El Tiente in Chile. So between the two of them, there's about 1 million tons. These labor unions haven't come to terms yet on an agreement. So we kind of will be watching to see what happens there during the September-October timeframe. There were some strikes earlier in the year, as you may know, Freeport and a couple of Chilean mines were also out, but those have been more or less resolved, although there are pockets of walkout still apparent, but they caused a brief flurry earlier this year, but they really didn't impact prices that much. Mainly because all of a sudden we got a lot of inventory builds in both on both the LME and in Shanghai, so it kind of took the air out of the rally a little bit. So now we'll see what happens going into Q4. You know, copper can easily take out the $3 mark if we get these strikes, and if we don't, or if China starts to slow down, we could come back down again.
I also noticed that Peru's stock market, I'm going off the Economist magazine's index, it's up over about 26% this year in dollar terms. Mm-hmm. I assume a lot of that is driven by the copper markets. Can you just discuss what this commodity move for copper and other metals means for developing economies?
Well, you know, in the case of Peru, I'm not really familiar what's going on with their economy as much. I do think things are relatively stable there. They are big producers of copper and tin, among other metals, and a host of other minerals.
I'm sorry, Ed. I meant Chile. Chile is up
26%. Sorry, Chile.
My fault.
Chile has been... Well, copper is obviously the main export there, so we are seeing a good rally in the Chilean sort of balance of payments. It has improved quite a bit. Chile was really struggling about a year and a half ago when copper prices were maybe 30% lower, and there was lots of questions as to whether all these mining companies could marshal enough capital to, you know, expand these mines, develop new mines, make them more efficient. But they seem to have been given a new lease on life. And in fact, Codelco announced last week that they will be embarking on a very ambitious 10-year expansion program. So, you know, that's what happens when prices rally. so strongly, you know, the whole balance sheet sort of changes.
Now, the IMF has world growth around 3.5%, you know, this year and next, roughly. And, you know, if you think about Europe and the U.S., they're growing at less than that, which would mean, you know, China, India, other developing countries are growing faster than that. And I just wanted to talk to you, want to hear what you have to say about the dollar going forward as well.
Yeah, the dollar has really been an interesting one. It's been weakening quite a bit, surprisingly. We are now lower than where we were when President Trump got into office. You would think that the dollar should be stronger given that the Fed is embarking on several rate increases. They've put two through this year. There's expectations of another one end of the year. However, that's not the case. instead the dollar is weakening. We see a couple of reasons behind this. Number one, obviously the markets are definitely seeing some unexpected turbulence in terms of what the Trump administration is doing. A lot of its initiatives are bogged down, as is no surprise if you've been watching the news. The healthcare proposal went nowhere. Tax reform is a very, very complicated issue if you want to do it, you know, very broadly, as opposed to just issuing a slice and just issuing a tax cut. But if you want to do comprehensive reform, it'll be very painstaking. So that's kind of bogged down. There's been very little details being forwarded on the infrastructure. $1 trillion spend over 10 years. That is still a work in progress. People have to figure out how it's going to be paid for. So, you know, you combine all these strands, and it makes, you know, it kind of takes the gloss a bit off the dollar, because people were thinking with the new administration coming in, we're going to get a lot of spending, a lot of growth, higher interest rates, and the dollar should be stronger. So that's a scenario that's been weakening the dollar. The other thing that's been weakening the dollar is that other central banks are no longer staying as dovish as they used to be. You know, the ECB is starting to think about raising rates. The Bank of Canada raised rates last month. The Bank of England is still sidelined for the moment, but it did indicate that it could start raising rates as well, possibly by next year. The Chinese have been tight for a while. So, you know, the Fed is in danger, so to speak, of seeing other countries kind of catch up. And that's been another pressure point on the dollar, because these other countries, they're still at the beginning of their rate increase, whereas we could be at the end. We could have one or two more rate increases, and then that's it for us. So, you know, the markets are kind of forward-looking, and they see that other central banks are starting to catch up.
Yeah, it's been a nice move in the dollar this year. I'm looking at the dollar euro chart, and you know, that 120 area looks like some serious resistance up there. I was, and you know, it's just hard to see. Do you think there's a shot that we could punch through that 120 area? We're like 117 and a half right now. Yes. I think.
I think we can. You know, Europe has really turned around. It's been the surprise story. You know, earlier this year, everybody was worried about the political dynamic in Europe with all these kind of fringe parties running around. People thought there might be an upset in Belgium. They were worried about Italy with the five-star movement. The UK has its own issues with Brexit. Chancellor Angela Merkel was also somewhat in questionable territory with her upcoming election. But it seems that the pendulum has swung against all the anti-establishment candidates. So you've had the establishment candidates really firmly back in charge right now in Italy, in France. I forgot to mention France with Macron's victory. So that has been very reassuring for the currency. And you can see it's just taken off dramatically since the beginning of the year. The other thing that's boosting the euro is the numbers out of Europe are really looking great. You know, the PMI numbers are all at multi-year highs. Unemployment is finally coming down. Consumers are spending a bit more than they used to. Business investment is picking up. So, you know, the euro is definitely in a sweet spot, so to speak. And, you know, it got to 119 earlier in August. So I think, to answer your question, could it take out 120? I think it could.
So you would be very worried about shorting it here, is what you're saying also, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't short it here. I think I am... You know, I think the dollar is still going to struggle for a couple of more months, despite the fact that we could get one more rate increase. I really think this political uncertainty in Washington is going to weigh on the currency. And also, as I mentioned, I think the other central banks are quickly catching up. So I think the dollar could have a little bit more downside to go from here.
Excellent. Let's move over to a very actively traded metal, gold. Mm-hmm. Gold is kind of chopping around in a range. And give us your thoughts on gold, please.
Yeah, gold. Your guess is as good as anyone. It's one of those that, you know, it's so hard to get your hands around. Recently, we've kind of made a stab to the $1,300 mark. As you could see from the charts, that's a triple top. So if you're trading it technically, we failed to get through, we failed to bust through. So we've kind of retraced by about $20 from that top. So if you're looking at trading gold technically, there could be more downside to go from here. The problem is you have all these things going on with geopolitical uncertainties, with North Korea being front and center, of course. It seems the North Koreans have backed down, given the rhetoric we've heard over the last 24 hours. However, I wouldn't write them off just yet. These guys are still very unpredictable.
Or the Americans.
both leaders.
Right.
But, you know, there's a bunch of military exercises between the U.S. and the South Koreans and the Japanese that are going to take place over the next week or two. And I read Kim Jong-un's statement. He didn't really capitulate. He just said, we're going to see what happens with these exercises. And you know, if they rub him the wrong way, he might do something crazy again. If he doesn't attack Guam, what happens if he just launches another missile vertically, you know, like he used to? Then what do we do? Do we take him out? So that's really a problem, and it's not going away, and it's become a big problem because both sides have really amped up the rhetoric, and it's becoming very confrontational and very dangerous.
Let me ask this question. Are you disappointed in the kind of move that gold had relative to the increased in tension?
Geopolitical tensions really don't drive gold that much. They might give it 20, 30, 40 bucks a pop, but you need to see follow through. And really what drives gold more than anything else, it's not a shooting war. It's not like a hot war. What really drives gold is economic dislocation and disequilibrium. So if you look at gold's history, really the big moves in gold were shortly after the 2008-2009 crisis, when the Federal Reserve went really, really loose, almost panicked. The other big move in gold was during the euro crisis, when we really had doubts whether the euro would survive as a currency. Whenever you get economic disequilibrium or a big collapse in the stock market, which hasn't happened in some time, that's when gold really, really takes off. These geopolitical tensions, they are supportive, but they don't have the staying power.
Following that line a little bit, I'm sure you saw that Bitcoin traded up to $4,000, into new high territory. And I was just wondering if you are hearing, or is anybody talking about the idea that perhaps people are looking at Bitcoin as the new gold or the new store of place to put money in case something happens. Have you heard that at all?
It's a good question. You know, I was always intrigued by this Bitcoin in terms of it being an alternative currency. The problem with it is it's not really backed by anything. You know, there's no reserve of gold or currency or a letter of credit or anything that kind of backs it. So it's really a it's really a platform out there. It's an exchange, and people bid it up kind of willy-nilly whenever they feel that things are getting a little too tense in the world or too unstable. You could make the case that Bitcoin is kind of picking up where gold has fallen short a bit. You know, to answer your earlier point about North Korea, you know, this North Korean saga hasn't done much for gold, maybe 30 or 40 bucks on the upside, but it could have contributed much more to the Bitcoin rally. So Bitcoin seems to be a bit more of a free and loose kind of a equilibrium, mimicking gold in a way. But, you know, you run the risk of an unregulated, sort of unhinged kind of a alternative currency, and it's always vulnerable to a setback, as has been the case in the past.
Yes, it'll be interesting. There's not a lot of information out there on, who's buying and why.
Right.
In Bitcoin. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I want to move over to platinum and palladium, a couple metals that have palladium is actually is it trading higher than platinum now?
Yeah. Palladium has been actually the best performing commodity so far in 2017. It's really been just shooting higher. It's at around $900 right now. It usually lags platinum by quite a bit. I must say it's been a bit of a puzzle. We were not that bullish on palladium for the last couple of months, and we've been wrong on it, mainly because the U.S. car market, which is a big user of palladium, has started to slow down. You know, sales are off by a couple of percentage points versus last year. The Chinese auto market, which is another big user, has also slowed down quite dramatically versus a year ago, although the last 2-3 months there's been a bit of a pickup. What seems to be happening in palladium is that there is a lot of investor and bank demand for palladium bars. And bars are made from palladium sponge. And so, there's been a lot of offtake of sponge that is being used to make the bars. And as a result, there's been a supply squeeze. So we've seen a lot of stock come off the CME, palladium stock, and that has resulted in backwardations hitting the market because the CME ingots are used to make some of these manufactured parts. So there's been a bit of the long and short of it is there's been a supply side squeeze because of the demand for bars. I'm just checking my notes. I think I've covered the main points on palladium. On platinum is really mainly driven by the European auto market. And, as you know, most of the catalytic converters in Europe are platinum-based because they run a lot of diesel. And with the problems the Europeans have been having with their diesel engines, less offtake, less buying of diesel cars. In fact, many countries are actually going to be outlawing gasoline cars altogether in 10, 20, 30 years as they move to EVs. So platinum has felt the brunt of that secular change. And also it's in more of a structural surplus than palladium is. So that's why it's been struggling relative to palladium.
So I'm looking at I look at things like the Atlanta Fed GDP numbers. These are now casts, and they're showing a 3.5% number for Q3. This is we're just starting to They'll revise it as information comes out on a daily basis,
right.
A couple of days. And last quarter, they kept revising it down. So let's say that the GDP, this number is correct for Q3, up 3.5% in the U.S. economy. Mm-hmm. What would you expect? What kind of plays would you see out there? Like, I assume the dollar would actually get stronger if that were to hold.
Right.
What about some of the metals? Would you be saying copper would react to that, or would they pretty much move on their own fundamentals?
Yeah. No, I think I really don't look at the U.S. market as being a key driver for the metals. It's just not there anymore. Just to give you an example, I think I mentioned earlier, the U.S. buys 8% of the world's copper. China buys 50%. The Chinese also take about half the world's aluminum, zinc. They produce and consume more than half of the world's steel. The U.S. share has been steady to declining over the years. So it's not going to do much for metal prices per se. This 3.5% Atlanta Fed number, keep in mind they update this practically every day, almost
yes.
In real time.
No question. And it's...
And they did actually have, 3.8, 3.9 readings for Q2. And
right.
Q2 ended up coming in at 2.6%.
Yes.
I think it's a bit early to say. I think the Fed will probably put a rate hike. Well, nobody's expecting a rate hike in September and October, which I find a bit odd because, you know, what's wrong with putting another rate hike through? Why do you have to wait till December, the last month of the year, to put your final rate hike through? Why not put it through now? If we're going to get a 3.5% reading in Q3, why not have a rate hike in September or October? Instead, the Fed seems to be waiting till December. At least this is what the Fed curve is telling you, the rate curve. And by December, it's going to have its back against the wall. If they don't raise the rates, they'll look a little silly. They'll lose some credibility. So they may have to raise the rates, although it may not be the right time to do it. You know, the economy could be slowing by then. So
yeah,
I really think they're still very much behind the curve, and they're being led by the market as opposed to leading the market.
Yeah, my pushback to that is I think the inflation numbers have not got into their range yet. I mean, if they look at the personal consumption expenditure deflator, it's not up to their target. So they really, if that's one of their indicators they're looking at, there's no rush to be raising rates when there's, you know, you haven't seen the whites of the inflation's
eyes. No, that's true. The inflation number depends which indicator you use, but some of the numbers, like the PPI numbers, were just under their 2% target.
Right.
And they even said, you know, even if it goes above our target, we really are not that concerned. I think this infatuation with inflation by all these central banks, I really don't see the logic to it. You know, the Japanese have been waiting for higher inflation for years now, and they still haven't gotten it. The ECB is saying the same thing. We are saying the same thing here, but for some reason, the inflation number is not coming through, despite the trillions of dollars being pumped into the global economy through all these QE steps. We're still not seeing, you know, the inflation readings moving up. We are seeing inflation in asset prices. You're seeing it in real estate, in the stock market, in the bond market, but sort of on the consumer level, the inflation readings are just not there. Which is really odd.
Yeah, there's this bias that's being talked about that a lot of members of the Fed have grown up during or had been going through school during the era of high inflation of the 70s, and so that bias, you know, is hard to get rid of. So they're always looking for the next wave of inflation, and they don't want to be a part of it. So
yes, you and I remember the days of 20% inflation and 20% interest rates.
Well, I have to say, in the early 80s, I made one of my all-time worst calls when someone asked me at a conference if I thought interest rates were double digits, and they asked me if I ever thought I'd see interest rates down at the 1950 levels, and I said, not in my lifetime. So I learned not to make those long-term projections.
Right.
But okay, so let's wrap it up. Anything out there that we talked about, or that you want to that we haven't talked about, that you want to mention? Any particular trades or trends that you see stick out that we haven't covered?
Not really. I think the commodities, I've been following them for many years. They're really decoupling in many respects. You've seen oil, which you covered, Jim, very, very extensively. It hasn't really moved very much, but yet we're seeing metals just taking off. Again, very much a China play more than anything else. But oil is lagging. The agricultural commodities, they've been in a bear market for years, but we finally saw them move over the summer months on account of weather. And the dollar has been, I think, the big surprise this year. Many people were bullish on the dollar at the start of 17. It hasn't performed in line with expectations. I think it will probably continue to weaken. I think President Trump will really have a lot of trouble getting his agenda through, given the polarization that exists in Washington and given the complicated issues. You have to give him that too. These issues are not easy to tackle. I mean, you just take tax reform. You throw out a proposal, you'll get 20 lobbying groups descending on Washington. Everybody wants to preserve their share of the tax code. So this is not easy, and I think as the equity markets, as the currency markets start to discount a kind of gridlock in Washington, that'll take its toll on the dollar.
Beautiful, thanks, Ed. Appreciate your talk. This is Jim Colburn. I was talking with Ed Meir. We're commoditiresearchgroup.com.